Chicago Foundation for Women's Alicia Tate. From the NRDC, Josh Mokerman, and Chicago Magazine writer Jeff Ruby. And now, here's your host, a man who is trying to bring back the fanny pack, Justin Kaufman.
I just got to get it in Billy Deck's hands. If I can get the fanny pack look, you know, maybe in Michigan Avenue Magazine, you know, maybe I can get on the cover of Splash. The fanny pack. It's back. Then you'll be getting that Vogue magazine when you are traveling. And then like the 23rd page of advertisements will be me with the fanny pack. I'll say Louis Vuitton. Louis Vuitton. Kaufman, Louis Vuitton. Welcome to The Download, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman. Hey, there are a million places you could be tonight, but you chose to be here, and I thank you. We've got a great show lined up tonight. Lots of great topics and news stories to unpack, from the Lucas Museum to gender equality to new Chicago Cub nicknames. Tonight's got something for everybody. First, we'll talk Lucas Museum and the impact from today's news that the Friends of the Park are suspending their lawsuit and at the same time opposing the mayor's plan to rehab McCormick Place East. We'll talk about that and some late breaking news on some serious cash flow issues for Chicago Public Schools. Will they have enough money to finish this school year? Mike Fouché from AlderTrack will be here tonight. My guest tonight at the big table, Alicia Tate, former editor and publisher of the Chicago Reporter. She also worked for Attorney General Lisa Madigan on issues of poverty. She's now working with the Chicago Foundation for Women, which is looking to end gender bias by the year 2030. Alicia Tate will join me to talk about women's issue this week before Mother's Day. Also, President Obama will host a Flint, Michigan summit to figure out where it all went wrong with tainted water there. Josh Mogerman from the NRDC is going to join me tonight to preview that meeting and also talk about cleanup efforts along the Chicago River. Also, crude oil and the growing concerns over bomb trains in the Chicago area. Bomb trains? Bomb trains? No, that's a thing. It's a very interesting story in Chicago Magazine about this. And I knew of this before because I've heard stuff and I reported on it in a different life. But there are, you know, with the crude oil and the boom in sort of, I guess, fracking in Canada and in the Dakotas, a lot of that oil will come through the Chicago area because that's the way the trains work. This is the, you know, transportation hub of the country. But those lines are crumbling. The infrastructure is pretty bad. The traffic is really intense. And a lot of those rail lines go through really populated places, Chicago neighborhoods, Northbrook, for instance, places where if there was a derailment and a possible accident that, you know, it could be pretty devastating, the explosion and the trouble it would cause from crude oil. So we'll talk with Josh Mogerman about that coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Also, we're going to talk with Jack Haggerty tonight. He's a board member at Next Steps, a rehab facility based in Willowbrook that helps people with spinal cord injuries. Jack's not just a board member, he's also a patient. He'll share his story of waking up one morning paralyzed from the neck down. Wow. Talk with Jack. He'll tell his personal story about that. So we'll talk with Jack Haggerty coming up also after 9 o'clock. And tonight, we begin our season-long challenge to give every Chicago Cub player and coach a legitimate, real-deal, authentic nickname. We should give them out now so when they win the World Series, they will be forever nicknamed, right? Just like the Bull, Rhino, Jody Davis. I don't know if he had one. But, you know, you got to get to it now. So here's the idea. Tonight in the 10 o'clock hour, we're going to take your calls. A couple of Chicago Magazine writers will be here to judge, and the winner with the best nicknames is going to get prizes. So tonight we'll start with two players because we want to do this every week for the next couple months. You know, we don't want to give away – we can't do Jake Arrieta tonight, right? That's got to be later, don't you think? Like, you got to build up to a Anthony Rizzo, right? Chris Bryant's more of like a September nickname. So tonight we're going to do two players. You ready for this? Dexter Fowler. So I need some nicknames for Dexter Fowler. Mm-hmm. And Justin Grimm.
Ah.
Justin Grimm, a middle reliever, closer. Or I guess he's a seventh inning guy now.
Mm-hmm.
Setup guy. Justin Grimm,
Dexter Fowler. 312-981-7200. We'll try to nickname them tonight, and the winner gets prizes. Good stuff, too. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. And I'm Justin Kaufman, and this here is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, let's start tonight with the carryout. This, of course, our nightly segment where I read the newspaper, so you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. What a turn of events in the saga over the Lucas Museum. If you aren't familiar, the Friends of the Park are challenging the Lucas Museum's location, saying Lakefront is not a place for a for-profit museum. Today, they suspended that lawsuit to negotiate with the mayor, but made it very clear that a floated proposal to gut the old McCormick Place East would not fly. You know what? I'm sorry. I can see your eyes glazing over. Let me put it in terms you can understand. So, Rahm and George Lucas, they're like the Empire. And Friends of the Park, they're like the Rebellion. Rahm's like Darth Vader. And Lucas, he's more like the Emperor.
I want my fortress to be on the lake.
Rahm, your wish is my command, my lord.
And then the Friends of the Park are like, not so fast. Watch out, Han. Oh, dear. Beep, boop, beep, beep, beep. Help me, Obi-Wan. Bernie Sanders, your only hope. Then there's a huge lightsaber fight in the Soldier Field parking lot. Did I get it? Did that make sense? I think I got it. Donald Trump looks to have won Indiana, even though Ted Cruz put a lot of effort into taking him down and also taking himself down. Cruz called Trump a narcissist and a serial philanderer today. Wow, what the heck's going on there? Oh, that's right. This is Ted Cruz's exit interview. Great. Thanks for playing, Ted. Okay, we'll definitely write this down. He's narcissist, philanderer, amoral. Okay, we got it. Also, can we get your swipe card? Don't let the door hit you on the way out. Thanks for playing. Today is World Press Freedom Day, which if I hear you talking about it, so help me God, I will put you in jail. Police have figured out a loophole in forcing you to unlock your iPhone, your fingerprint. They can't ask you for your passcode because that would violate your Fifth Amendment right. But they can use your fingerprint because fingerprints aren't in your mind or whatever. And newer iPhones have fingerprint security, so judges are issuing warrants left and right. Hey, I guess a warrant to put your finger on your phone is still better than handcuffing me to a radiator and yelling at me like it's an episode of NYPD Blue. So I'll take it, I guess. Google is buying up minivans to set up for self-driving tests. Just great. Can't wait for the robot to parallel park that thing. Which way do you turn the wheel? How close am I to the curb? Also, minivans, are they going to simulate self-driving with a family of robots? I will turn this car around. The Tony nominations were announced today, and the musical Hamilton got every single one. Every nomination, no other play. All 200-plus nominations went to Hamilton, as expected. Nothing to see here. Move along. In weather, what a day creeping to that really small window where we love this town's weather. We're so close. In sports, John Danks, he gone. The White Sox pitcher was released today. That dude is due like $16 million, and he's so bad this year that the Sox are just going to eat it. That's like Jay Cutler money. That's like Derrick Rose money. That's like Bruce Rauner money. But this kind of shows that the Sox are for real. First LaRoche and now Danks. Hey, if you get paid a lot and you don't produce, you go do reality TV on the Hunting Channel. Simple as that. The Sox get the other obnoxious Sox at the sale tonight. Speaking of obnoxious, we got to play the Pirates again tonight. The two teams threw at each other yesterday, and who knows how that's going to play out all series. I just hope that that one bench Pirate boxes the Gatorade jug again. So funny. Just Google Gatorade jug Pirates, and you see so many funny vines. Tonight, no Jason Hayward again with the wrist injury. Chris Bryant's going to start in right field, and Jake Arrieta takes to the mound. It's like the Rolling Stones. Yeah, Jake Arrieta, stop me up. Hey, let's catch up with former Chicago Bulls playing in the NBA playoffs. Luol Deng and his Miami Heat take on Toronto, and Kyle Korver's Atlanta Hawks are taking on the Cavs, and that's as much research as I could stand today. Korver actually had a terrible first-round playoff series and only took one shot last night. Just like when he was here. Choke City. Jeez. And finally, Superman vs. Batman's final numbers are out, and it made over $900 million. But the bigger story is that it was outgrossed by Deadpool, thus making Superman vs. Batman's $900 million a failure. Yep, take that in next time you balance your checkbook. Babe, you know what? We just don't have the money. We're going to have to skip milk this week. But hey,
Happens to the best of us. Did you see Superman vs. Batman? It only made $900 million, so they're hurting too, losers. That's the carryout for May 3rd, 2016. Hey, did you order the chicken dinner? We're out of chicken, but no worries. I'll just double up on the coleslaw. Coming up, we'll talk more about the Lucas Museum, also Chicago Public Schools, and a cash flow problem. Will they have enough money to finish out the school year? Wow. All that coming up here on The Download on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Breaking news here, as Ted Cruz is talking to supporters in Indianapolis, reports are out that he is suspending his presidential campaign. He's dropping out of the presidential race. He's on stage now. Let's take a listen.
Our party now. The Republican Party of Ronald Reagan and of George Herbert Walker Bush ensured that thousands of nuclear missiles that the Soviet Union and the United States had targeted each other were never fired, and that Soviet communism was consigned to the ash heap of history. They fought hard so that our American freedoms were not lost to any foreign foe, nor sacrificed in pursuit of any domestic agenda of the Democratic Party. Yet the challenges we face today remain as great as ever. Americans are deeply frustrated and desperately want to change the path that we're on. We have economic stagnation at home, and our constitutional rights are under assault. Under the Obama-Clinton foreign policy, Russia has emerged as a resurgent threat. China looks with a covetous eye on the lands of our allies in the region. A nuclear North Korea and a near-nuclear Iran yearn to devastate our homeland. And radical Islamic terrorism unleashes an evil that threatens the world. This year, 2 weeks before our party gathers in Cleveland, all Americans will celebrate the 240th birthday of the United States of America. American parents and grandparents will watch the fireworks with their kids and will dream of the grandchildren and great-grandchildren to come and wonder how those future generations of Americans will remember what we do not only this summer, but in the coming decades. Will we rise to meet the challenges that face our nation on the international stage, or will we withdraw and cower timidly from the world? Will we secure freedom of thought, expression, and religion for future generations? Or will we succumb to the tyranny of a political correctness and the temptation of racial politics and balkanization here at home? Will we hold fast to our founding values of rewarding talent, hard work, and industry? Or will we continue on that path of creeping socialism that incentivizes apathy and dependency? Will we deliver control of health care to citizens and their doctors? Or will we continue down the Obamacare road to second-rate socialized medicine? Will we keep America safe from the threats of nuclear war and atomic terrorism? Or will we pass on to future generations a land devastated and destroyed by the enemies of civilization? This is the responsibility with which we have been charged by history. This is our challenge. This is the fight that falls to our generation. When we launched this campaign 13 months ago, we saw a movement grow. The pundits all said it was hopeless, but we saw over 300,000 volunteers all across this nation. Over 1.5 million contributions, averaging about $60 each. Many of those volunteers, many of those contributions, you never forget. Just a few days ago, two young kids, ages 4 and 6, handed me two envelopes full of change. All of their earnings from their lemonade stand. They wanted the campaign to have it. That's what built this campaign. That's what fueled this movement. Thank you to each of you, incredible patriots who have fought so hard to save our nation. And I with you. I am so grateful to you, to my amazing wife, Heidi. To our precious girls, Caroline and Catherine. To my mom, the prayer warrior.
We've been listening to Texas Senator Ted Cruz speaking in Indianapolis after it was called tonight. Very early on that Donald Trump had, in fact, won the state's primary. As it sits right now, he still has a 15-point lead over Ted Cruz, picking up 45, again, at least of right now, of the 57 delegates that are available in Indiana. Now, multiple outlets are reporting. In fact, they're citing a source out of the Ted Cruz campaign that this speech that he's giving right now will, in fact, be the end of his campaign. They're reporting that he is going to drop out of the 2016 presidential race. Of course, as reaction continues to pour in, we will pass it along to you. We're going to take a quick break here for sports, traffic, and weather, all next on WGN. Yeah, and before we take a quick look at sports, Justin, our top story, Ted Cruz, in fact, is dropping out of the 2016 presidential race.
I've said that I would continue on as long as there was a viable path to victory. Tonight, I'm sorry to say, it appears that path has been foreclosed. Together, we left it all on the field in Indiana. We gave it everything we've got. But the voters chose another path. And so, with a heavy heart, but with boundless optimism for the long-term future of our nation, we are suspending our campaign.
And there you have it. It is all done for Ted Cruz. It was widely suspected that if he did not have a strong showing in Indiana tonight, he would, in fact, do that. The funding is basically drying up.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. Big news, Ted Cruz, man, out of the race, suspends his campaign for president after losing in Indiana. But it was inevitable, but he was threatening for brokered and contested conventions. He wasn't going to go away quietly. Mike Fouché is in from AlderTrack, covers all things Chicago politics, but also, you know, obviously a political observer.
I got opinions.
What's your thought on Ted Cruz stepping aside?
Well, I mean, it was really kind of the window was closing, right? It was clear that he wasn't really getting a good message across in Indiana. A lot of reports that were coming is that he was having a very hard time building support in Indiana. You know, you had Governor Mike Pence come out for Trump. I mean, that's pretty rough for him. You know, but as we were talking about during the break.
Great trivia question.
Who is the shortest lived vice presidential candidate ever? And the answer is Carly Fiorina.
Carly Fiorina.
What? That is fantastic, right?
We all have that when we're like, should I leave my job? Should I go to this new thing? They'll try it. What's the worst that can happen?
Do you get like a plaque? Is there a portrait gallery somewhere?
Well, you know? I mean, obviously there was a lot of movement with Trump and Kasich and even Marco Rubio suspending his campaign to hold on to delegates.
Kasich is still in.
Yeah, but so the question.
He might win it.
The question is, I mean, does this essentially end that talk of a brokered convention or a contested convention that was becoming the only way that someone not named Trump was going to get the nomination?
Well, I mean, I can't speak for the minds of Republican leaders, but you know, over the last couple of weeks, we've been seeing a lot of reports of Republican leadership really feeling that maybe they weren't too keen on the idea of a conflict at the convention, a brokered convention. And that they were looking for Trump to be able to seal up the numbers. He's certainly getting there, if not there already. I think that maybe today closes the deal.
I think he was
him.
Short, like a hand, like 200.
Yeah, well, then he's not quite there, but he's almost there. The nature of the Republican Party is not to be looking for conflict anyway. I mean, the nature of the Republican Party has always been, how do you fall in line? And that I think that's what we're kind of seeing here.
Obviously they're going to put their resources, whatever that might be, behind Donald Trump for a Republican nomination. But you know, not the greatest candidate for the established Republican Party. Do you see the donors and others who have been giving to Republicans for years and years and years maybe saying, you know what, we're just going to sit this one out?
That's a great question. I mean, Mitch McConnell, the leader of the GOP, the GOP Senate leader, has been saying, let's try and find a way so that we can run Senate campaigns that are outside of Donald Trump, that are avoiding Donald Trump. But I think that there's a really important thing that's going on in the Republican Party here, which is that Donald Trump is pushing away a lot of the old wreckage the Republican Party has had for a long time, which is you talk a big game about social morals and then you toss it away as soon as you get to being in office, and that you talk a big game about tax cuts. But what we're finding out with all these people that are supporting Donald Trump is that tax cuts are less important than protecting jobs, than protecting being able to continue moving forward, that there is some sort of social morality that's important, but it's not nearly as big a deal as it has been in the past.
Quick correction just on the combos. We move out of this and move to more local stuff. Pence did endorse Ted Cruz.
Excuse me. That's right. Yeah, Pence did endorse Ted Cruz.
So, yeah. But regardless, I mean, it didn't matter because Donald Trump wipes the floor in Indiana. More on this. We'll obviously have so much more on this with WGN News. Also Steve Cochran in the morning. We'll have plenty of analysis on what this means. But you know what? We've kind of analyzed this to death. I mean, last night we had Charles Lipson and Dave Lundy on talking about this same scenario, talking about
experts,
Donald Trump, you know, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump summer.
Yeah.
You know, as we're getting away from the primaries, even though they're not done, this obviously shuts the door on the Donald Trump side of this.
Well, and there's already been reports about how Hillary Clinton is ahead of Donald Trump in putting together a national organization. She announced earlier this week that she's been hiring state directors in Colorado and Ohio and some other states. Mm-hmm. So she's already building her organization for a general campaign. And there's a lot of work that Donald Trump has to do with that. And one of the big raps against him is that he doesn't have much of an organization. He hasn't been able to build people for his campaign. So I think there's a lot for him to overcome.
Yeah.
He'll have a lot of Republican Party support to do that.
Well, we'll have endless conversation about that throughout the summer. Let's talk about today's big news, the Lucas Museum. And it's a strange piece of news because it started. I mean, this is the anatomy of this news story today, the cycle. At the beginning, in the morning, the story was that the Friends of the Park have suspended their lawsuit.
Right.
So it felt like a win for the mayor. They were going to be able to negotiate. But quickly, after Friends of the Park started talking to media sources, the Sun Times, others, it started to quickly be not that.
Right. And actually what it is that Friends of the Park had said that they're actually preparing to sue against anything that goes on the lake. And Melanie Hobson, the wife of Steven Spielberg and Melanie Hobson's from Chicago.
George
Lucas. What did I say?
Steven Spielberg.
Hey.
That's kind of awesome.
Sorry, guys.
That may be the best flub in the history of flubs.
You know,
Spielberg's
whatever.
Wife. What does she have to do with this? Right. All right.
And so anyway, George Lucas's wife, Melanie Hobson, and Melanie Hobson's from Chicago. Melanie Hobson released a statement where she said, the Friends of the Park are actually no friend to Chicago. And that if there's anything that we should know, it's that Friends of the Park killed this project.
And the Friends of the Park are quick to respond to that, saying, we didn't kill anything. We will fight to sue for anyone who puts anything on the lakefront.
Right.
Maybe the question is to ask George Lucas why he won't change
right.
locations.
So
you're getting a nice little war of words here between the Lucas camp, the Friends of the Park camp. And Rahm Emanuel's kind of stuck in the middle here. He kind of... When the winds changed and it felt like the judge may, you know, side with Friends of the Park in this lawsuit, he started throwing out compromises. McCormick
yep.
placed
he did
East.
Everything
he did everything he possibly
everything
could.
Everything he could.
To save George Lucas's museum, because the truth of the matter is he did everything but suggest different locations off the lakefront.
That's exactly right. And, you know, and there's a really interesting thing that I want to point out here, which is that the executive director of Friends of the Park is a woman named Juanita Irizarry. And Juanita Irizarry was the unsuccessful candidate for 31st Ward Alderman.
Hmm.
She lost to Millie Santiago. So considering how much impact that this failed aldermanic candidate has had on the city of Chicago just in that short period of time, I think that's kind of interesting.
But this is, I mean, this is a lawsuit that's been, I mean, I remember when we first started this show, The Download, that first week, like, I think it was April.
We've been talking about this.
We've been talking about this for a year, and there was a different Friends of the Park executive director who was on the way. I remember trying to get her to come on the show, and she wouldn't come on. So, I mean, this has been something, again.
They've been prosecuting for a long time.
Exactly. This is not the Friends of the Park with an axe to grind against Mayor Emanuel and an axe to grind against George Lucas. They have, I mean, their mission.
They have a clear plan.
Their
plan is what they're all about.
Is to protect lakefront parks and other places that are of the public interest.
Yeah.
And so this just falls into line, and they just found a judge in this case who's saying, there might be something here.
That's
and
exactly
you're watching
right.
the mayor reel, who was hoping that he could almost, as a verb, Mayor Daley this.
We were joking before the segment
that if Mayor Daley was still mayor, it'd be more, what's that construction project on the lake right now? What is that? I don't know. And then we'd have this conversation after it was already up. All right, the last thing we talk about quick as we try to catch up on the time of the show. The CPS, big news this afternoon.
Yeah.
CPS leaders telling the aldermen that money issues are going to be pretty tight to end this season or this year and also for next year.
Yesterday and today, CPS officials briefed aldermen on what they expect their budget to be. And their budget should be coming out in the next couple of weeks.
Mm.
And they said a number of things. One is which they're going to have about a $1.1 billion deficit. So that's not money they owe. That's money. That's the gap
now,
from what they need.
We've been throwing around 400, 600, 600.
That was last year.
Last year. That's the number that the state was trying to cover. So
the next year,
we're talking $1.1 billion.
Right. Without some kind of state aid. Now, they have a whole package that they brought to city council where city council might be able to contribute to some extent, about $140 million. But, you know, that's a drop in the bucket in the whole bigger, larger project. It has to be about state aid and the ability for Chicago Public Schools in order to raise their property taxes. They're right at the cap.
Is there any way this is just essentially sounding the alarm or getting ready,
ringing
the bell because the governor has floated the idea of changing the formula and giving less next year?
You know, a lot of their proposal. Well, what they said in their numbers that they presented is that they've already cut about $700 million from last year's budget. And so what they're arguing is there's not a whole lot more that can be cut without actually cutting education services to kids.
So they need, I mean, first we need a budget. Down
first
in Springfield,
we need
we're
a
talk about that
for the whole state,
of course, and that include. And then, of course, there needs to be some funding coming in for the.
That's right.
City schools.
So, you know, I think that clearly we're at a point where there's a major crisis that's coming. The other interesting piece of news is that CPS said at the end of their fiscal year, which is June 30th, they're only going to have $24 million on hand, which is about a day and a half of operations.
Wow.
For CPS. CPS has got some other problems where their ability to borrow They can still borrow from banks. You know, they haven't announced how much they've borrowed. Best guesses are somewhere around $1 billion of short-term debt. But they have the need to be able to borrow additional money from bondholders. And their ability to borrow from bondholders, as we found out a couple months ago when they had a lot of problems going to the bond markets, has really been restricted greatly. So I think it's going to be very hard for them to come up with any money without the ability to raise property taxes or getting cash from the state.
Mike Fouché is with AlderTrack.com. He checks in with us once a week here on the download. Great local stories in the shadow of the big national
story that Ted Cruz is
dropped out of the presidential race. Mike Fouché, thanks for joining us.
Good tonight. To be here.
Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're going to stand by and wait for Donald Trump, who is going to speak in Indiana after his win in the primary tonight and the news that his challenger, Ted Cruz, has dropped out of the race. So we will hear from Ted Cruz when he steps to the podium. Well, my guest tonight at the big table has seen Chicago from a few different angles. Alicia Tate started her journalism career at the Daily Herald. She moved to edit and publish the Chicago Reporter. She moved out of journalism to work in the public sector. And she was a speechwriter and advisor for Attorney General Lisa Madigan. And just this year, she was appointed to the Director of Programs at the Chicago Foundation for Women. The Chicago Foundation for Women is currently behind the 100% Project, a drive to end gender bias by 2030. That's discrimination. That's equal pay. It's to provide economic security to low-income women, who are rarely represented in the media and government and yet sometimes feel the brunt of politics and policy, like what's happening in the state budget impasse. Not a bad topic to discuss in advance of Mother's Day, and a great guest to finally have on the download. Alicia Tate, welcome to this program.
Thank you so much for having me, Justin. I'm really glad to be here.
As I introduce you to have a great conversation, I'm excited to talk to you. Donald Trump has taken the stage. So, Rob, do you think we should go to Donald Trump and bring him up and see what he has to say about Ted Cruz and the win in Indiana? What do you think?
It was an impressive victory. Let's go to Donald Trump. He's speaking in New York City right now.
Unbelievable day and evening and year, and never have been through anything like this, but it's a beautiful thing to watch and a beautiful thing to behold, and we're going to make America great again. We're going to make America great again. So important. The people of Indiana have been incredible. I started, as you know, not very long ago, about 6 weeks ago, and I was told I had a 20-point deficit. And I went there, and I worked very hard, and I campaigned, and I made lots of speeches and met lots of incredible people. Incredible people. You don't get better. And the crowds got bigger and bigger, and toward the end, it was like I didn't want to leave. I almost said, maybe I'll just never leave. And it resonated somehow. And we had a tremendous victory tonight. It was a tremendous victory. And I have to thank Bobby Knight. Boy, Bobby Knight was incredible. He was incredible.
So, Justin, there you have it. Donald Trump speaking at Trump Tower in Manhattan. It was an incredible victory. Bobby Knight, Gene Katie, Digger Phelps, Lou Holtz, all of the dignitaries from Indiana sports came out in support of Donald Trump, and he won big tonight over Ted Cruz, who announced earlier that he suspended his campaign. Another update to tell you about as well, Justin, ABC and other outlets projecting that Bernie Sanders will win the Indiana primary on the Democratic side.
There you go. That's interesting. So Bernie Sanders projected winner in Indiana. That's news. That's good. Okay, so you know what? I guess what we'll do is we'll take a quick break so we can get back on time, and we'll start our conversation with Alicia Tate right after the break. How's that sound? That sound good? All right, it's the download here on 720. Stay with us. All right, it's the download here on WGN.
We're past the Ted Cruz and Donald Trump speeches, and we're back to the program. Thanks for sticking with us. Alicia Tate's my guest in studio. She's the director of programs at the Chicago Foundation for Women. We talk about a lot of things tonight. We'll talk about the 100% Project. Talk about your career as a journalist who moved to the public sector and is now with the foundation. And also just about Chicago, because you've covered it from many different angles. Alicia Tate, thanks for being my guest tonight.
Thank you for having me. And I'm glad Donald Trump kept it short so we could get this conversation going.
Alicia, he's still talking. Oh, okay. We just cut out of
it. I'm glad you cut out of him just in a short period of time so we could talk about really important issues for Chicago.
Well, let's talk about the 100% Project, because essentially the mission of this project is to end gender bias by 2030. What does that mean?
Well, it means a bunch of different things. The first thing is we have to recognize what gender bias is. It's one of those things. It's kind of like the air we breathe. It's just around us all the time. There's a really big lack of awareness of what it means. I mean, I think as a city, we're becoming a lot more conscious about race and race, you know, racial inequities and that kind of thing. But gender bias, I don't know, you know, about you, but a lot of women in my generation, we've gotten the message that, you know, the glass ceilings have been broken. We can do anything now. Right. There's no more obstacles. So part of what we have to do first is identify, hey, we all have these biases. We're all expected to play these different roles in society. We get set up to play these roles. And then there are just these deep inequities. I mean, no matter how hard I try, I'm still going to earn 77, you know, cents for every dollar that you earn, no matter what I do. And that's different, even less money for women of color. So that's one piece, is just identifying gender bias. So part of what we've tried to do is get people talking about it more. We kicked off an effort earlier this spring called Talk It Out, which will be an ongoing effort where we just try to encourage people to have those conversations in their workplaces, their homes, their churches, whatever it is, their faith communities. Just talk about what are some of the ways, you know, men and women get treated. Have they ever seen a woman get paid less than a man? You know, just basic questions like that. And when you start telling those stories, and I got to sit in on some sessions with some young people talking about it. When they start talking about the difference between how girls and boys are treated in school, it's really stunning to just.
What are some of those differences? What are you hearing from a different generation?
Like, you hear girls say, well, when I speak up and show my mind as a girl or have opinions as a girl, they tell me I'm talking too much or I'm being too loud or I'm too opinionated. But when the boys act out, they just say, oh, that's just boys being boys.
So that happens all the time. That's a younger generation.
Yeah, that's middle schoolers and high schoolers telling us that. You know, and then there are all kinds of double standards about clothes and how you dress and how you're supposed to conduct yourself, you know, all those kinds of things. One of the most telling comments I heard was from a young woman who said, I fight with my father all the time because he says I'm too opinionated, but my mother raised me to have my own opinions. You know, so she's just caught in the middle.
And I was going to say that seems to be a big, not a problem, but that's an issue in families because you do have the different way that people are being brought up.
Absolutely.
And that seems to have influence in how people act in society.
Absolutely. You know, and so that's one piece, just identifying how this affects all of us in our dynamics, in our lives, in our workplaces. And so we've got try to get people talking about it, but we also recognize this is an issue for everybody. This isn't just a women and girls issue. This affects men and boys too. You guys have a role in this too. It's a setup, you know, the role you guys are expected to play in this. So we've started an initiative to get male champions of change on this issue. CEOs, heads of organizations who say, you know, I'm committed to this issue. This is my issue too. I know that if I'm building organizations and fighting for communities where women and girls have equity, then I'll have a better business. I'll have a healthier community. You know, it just won't work for all of us unless it really works for women and girls too. So that's another part of that. But then we've also got to, you know, collaborate and build partnerships. We recognize we as a foundation can't end gender bias on our own. So we're looking for all kinds of institutions, media, government, corporate sponsors, you know, nonprofits who are also similarly committed to this and who we can work with on different strategies. And then that's kind of the last piece of the puzzle.
Do you find
policy changes?
I was going to say, this is an issue that obviously has been around, you know, in modern American, not just American, the global.
Yeah, global.
But it's an issue that I can't see foundations or politicians or businesses or anybody saying, nah, I'm not into that. Like, it just feels to me like that it's the issue that everybody wants to be involved with, yet you still see 77 cents to the dollar.
Well, in principle, I think people agree that it's wrong for there to be this kind of inequity. But we have to actually have policies and strategies to back that up. I mean, we have to have equal pay, and we have to enforce equal pay. You know, we have to have, you know, I'm a dear friend of mine who is a guy who I really consider who really gets it about these issues. He was telling me at his law firm, it's just so interesting that all the partners are men and all the associates are women. You know, that's not okay. You need to have strategies so that that doesn't actually happen, that you create pathways for women to occupy all types of leadership roles.
Right.
And then you have to actually make sure resources are distributed in ways that benefit women and girls. And I know we'll talk about this in a little while, but you know, in terms of the impact of what's happening in the state of Illinois, those resources are being stripped away. So you can't just do this in principle. We really need everybody to be all in on this effort. We call it like an all in, all out effort, you know, where we really have to walk our talk.
Are there still, I mean, you've been in some of the, I guess, the professions, I mean, from journalism to politics to even in the foundation work. Are there some areas where you're just not seeing growth or a movement towards equality? Like you mentioned law firms. I mean, are there some areas where it's just always going to be a boys club and they're lagging behind the concept of equal pay or gender, getting rid of gender bias?
Well, I think the growth is slower in most areas than most of us want to admit. I mean, in C-suites, in corporate America, the growth is just... it's just barely inching along.
Really?
In terms of women in C-suites and corporates and on corporate boards. I mean, there are a lot of great organizations in Chicago, like the Chicago Network, that work really hard to get more women on boards, get more women in C-suites, but that growth is pretty incremental. And then, you know, and then going down several rungs on the ladder, women are vastly overrepresented among minimum wage workers in Illinois. The vast majority of minimum wage workers in this state are women of color, you know, so... I would call those two areas where we could stand to make a lot of progress. But I think if you look at most organizations, institutions, to really look at, is there parity? Are there really as many women as men in leadership roles? And are they earning the same amount of money? Do they get the same benefits? Do you have policies that actually support women to take those roles? Parental leave, sick time, you know, all the things women need to actually be able to do their jobs well, because we raise the families, you know, we raise the children. So those are important. So you have to have all those policies. But I think there's room for improvement in pretty much every sector.
Well, let's take a break for the news. But I do want to get at the state budget impasse and how that affects, because it is interesting that if the majority of people working at minimum wage are women of color, that it almost feels like politics is part to play in gender bias as well, because a lot of times it's the people without the voice, the voiceless who, you know, systems and services and social programs are taken away over essentially a political fight. And that continues, and we see it in the state of Illinois. They almost become pawns. And so we'll talk about that after the news. Alicia Tate's my guest tonight. She's a director of programs at the Chicago Foundation for Women, former publisher and editor of the Chicago Reporter, also worked for Lisa Madigan along the way. We'll continue our conversation after the news. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Josh Mogerman's going to be here from the NRDC. Talk about not only securing our waterways and making sure that our drinking water doesn't have stuff in it. We're going to talk about the bomb trains. Chicago Magazine had a big piece about the bomb trains, crude oil, and its transport through the Chicago area. So we'll talk with Josh about that coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Also, tonight, Jeff Ruby's going to be here, and we're going to we're going to interact with you to come up with Chicago Cub nicknames. We need nicknames for the Chicago Cubs. They're going to be a World Series team, the best team baseball's ever seen. Every single player on that team needs to have a legitimate, authenticated nickname. And it comes from WGN Radio. How about that? So we're going to start a new series where we give every single player a nickname. You're the one who's going to help us out, and we have great prizes for you if you give us the winning nickname. That's coming up later tonight on The Download. But right now, we continue our conversation at the big table with Alicia Tate. She is the director of programs at the Chicago Foundation for Women. Alicia, I knew Alicia from when she was the publisher and editor of the Chicago Reporter. How long ago was that now?
Oh, my God. A lifetime ago. No, that was early 2000s. Early 2000s.
Do you miss it? Do you miss being in journalism? Like, I mean, the Chicago Reporter was great because
still is.
Great magazines
still,
still
great.
Is. You're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
Doing excellent work.
But really giving voice to the voiceless, talking about some of the stories that are not in the newspapers, doing some really great investigative journalism.
Absolutely.
Do you miss that? Do you miss that part of your life?
I mean, sure, there's things I miss about it. But for me, even journalism, the common theme in my career has always been the issues. I've always just been passionate about issues of equity, you know, on a variety of levels. You know, race and poverty is what we, you know, focused on at the Chicago Reporter. Now I'm, you know, focused on gender bias, but also how it intersects, you know, mm-hmm. with race and economics too. So as long as I keep getting to work on those issues, I'm happy, you know, really. Right. But it was, yeah, it was a great place to be. I learned a tremendous amount, got exposed to so many parts of this city, and had a great, great mentor in Laura Washington, who was my predecessor.
Oh, absolutely,
so
yeah.
Really learned from the best.
You know, you moved on to the public sector. You were a speechwriter and a policy advisor for Lisa Madigan, the Attorney General. I mean, at the Reporter, you did a lot of work, you know, reporting or talking about the issues in government.
Yeah.
Moving to government, what did you learn?
It's very different than reporting on it. I really, you know, having covered government and politics for several years at the Chicago Reporter and, you know, kind of being a local pundit on political issues, I really thought, oh, I know how government works. I know this system. You really do not know it until you are in it.
How so? I'm intrigued.
Well, you know, for one thing, I'll tell you, I had assumed all those times that we had freedom of information requests denied because they said the information is not available in that format. We can't get you that information.
That they were hiding
something. That they were hiding something. They were lying to us. They were just stalling. Once I worked in government, I realized, oh no, they may really not have that information in some logical way that we think it should be kept. Like, it could be in 10 different places. It could be a whole bunch of different people having different pieces of it. It's such a huge, huge, huge system with so many people with their fingers in the pie. Half of what I had to learn in government was just that you have to spend time just figuring out who has what pieces of information.
Right.
So the thing I learned as a reporter that came in handiest when I first started at State of Illinois was the cardinal rule, which is the reporter. You always make friends with the secretaries, every administrative person, because they will know everything and they will help you find everything you can't find.
That's right.
So that was the first thing I did. But no, it was a great experience. The people are incredible because they put up with a lot of stuff. They put up with a lot in terms of just inefficiencies in how government runs, the people walking in off the street with all kinds of issues. We, you know, the Attorney General, people know she has a hotline that actual people answer. So people call with questions about everything, including stuff like their aldermen should answer. So people, they're very patient and very kind. And I really loved, you know, what I learned there. But it was definitely a learning experience.
You know, for you, I mean, you mentioned it, but the idea of working at the Reporter and sort of, you know, speaking truth to power and almost, you know, that this power is the evil empire kind of concept that sometimes we project on the government.
Right.
Does that changed in your life?
I mean,
looking
yeah.
back, you're like now.
Well, when you work for an elected official, of course, you have a different perspective on that. You realize these are just people. I mean, they are in particular roles. But they're people. And all the people that I thought, oh, it's those special people making policy and who know have all the answers and are making decisions, they are just folks. And I really had an appreciation, actually, for the role of media. Once a good, you know, good journalism, once I was in government, I saw that, you know, politicians and policy folks really do pay attention to really good pieces of media and reporting because government folks do not have the resources to do that kind of research and in-depth, you know, kind of examination of issues. So that was also a good learning.
So investigative reporting is it's
really
they're
valuable.
Paying attention to
hugely,
it.
Hugely valuable. And the other thing to tie it to my current job, you know, working for Lisa Madigan in particular was, you know, getting to work for a woman who's been very, very intentional about building a team with a lot of women in key leadership roles. That was a new experience for me there. And I think made a big difference in terms of just my own kind of leadership development, my own growth. That was different from anything I had experienced in my career, being around that many women sort of making those calls, you know, in big ways.
You didn't see that in other governmental agencies, sort of a push to have more women involved in their offices?
You know, I don't want to comment on what other officials do, but I definitely think, you know, Attorney General Madigan is known for that, for being very intentional about that. And it does make a difference when a woman is the boss. I mean, it just really does. We make that case with race all the time. You know, we know, like, you know, talk about the Academy Awards or whatever. Well, sure. We need more Black people producing movies. You know, we need more Black people in the Academy. It's the same with women. When you have women in charge, more women get chances and opportunities that they normally wouldn't get.
Let's talk about the state government impasse. We kind of teased this out at the beginning of the, before we went to the news. But, you know, I'm fascinated to think about, I mean, really kind of, I'm curious, I guess, to the idea that this is disproportionately affecting women. The idea of services, social programs, things that are being cut because the governor and the Speaker of the House are standing their ground.
Yeah, well, let me give you a few examples of this. So, you know, I mentioned earlier that low-wage workers are disproportionately women. So when you strip away safety nets, they are going to be the most affected. The households that depend on the state's child care subsidies, we've heard a lot in the news about the child care subsidies, 78% of those households are female-headed households. You know, those are single moms who depend on that subsidy. More than half of the students in Illinois' public universities are women. You know, women make up the majority of students who receive those MAP grants that we've heard so much about. And just in terms of what's happening in the nonprofit sector in general, 7 out of 10 nonprofit workers in Illinois are women. And those agencies, as we know, are being like dramatically affected by this. The United.
So when we talk about social service cuts,
yes,
it disproportionately affects women.
It disproportionately affects women. The United Way has been surveying the organizations it provides funds to, and earlier this year, you know, it found that over a quarter of those organizations had been laying off staff already. So then women lose their jobs. So all of these things eat away at women's ability to be self-sufficient. And I'll give you a couple of very specific examples from our grantees. One is an agency called Family Shelter Services, which is out in DuPage County in Wheaton, you know, an area that we consider pretty affluent. And yet issues of domestic violence happen everywhere. So they were working with a woman who was trying to leave her abuser. She has a child, you know, she's trying to leave her abuser. They helped her find a job. They helped her find an apartment. And she was able to move out. But then she lost her child care subsidy from the state. So she had to move back in with her abuser. She just did, without that support, she cannot be economically self-sufficient and support her child. That's one example. Another agency that we funded is the Pediatric AIDS Chicago Prevention Initiative. And this is, you know, there's been a lot of publicity about this initiative. This initiative has prevented the transmission of HIV from mothers to babies, and it saves the state $35 million a year. That program is going to end in November unless there's a budget, because 90% of its funding comes from the state. It costs us an average of $1 million over a lifetime, you know, to support a baby who's been born HIV positive.
Do politicians, especially the ones in leadership positions, Are they familiar with these demographic breakdowns? Do you think that they understand who they're directly or disproportionately affecting when there is inaction like there is?
I think, of course, that depends on the politician, Justin. And I think that, you know, people really underestimate the importance of you communicating to your local elected officials what a difference this is making in your community, what damage this is doing to your community. Because we also know that whole communities suffer when women suffer. Women are like the backbone of most communities, particularly communities that are most impoverished. So they have got to hear from us that this is affecting all different aspects of the community. And I found it, you know, kind of encouraging just to give a little shout out. You know, we had a number of women elected to the General Assembly in this last election cycle, women with social justice backgrounds, you know, who are not career politicians, who bring some fresh voices, perspectives, women of color, you know. So I'm optimistic that we'll have a little bit more responsiveness to this. But I think people just really have to communicate this over and over and over again.
My guest tonight at the big table, Alicia Tate. She's the director of programs at the Chicago Foundation for Women. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the conversation. I want to get your take on Chicago. Obviously, you know, you've seen it from a lot of different angles.
There's a lot going on
we'll
in Chicago.
Talk about your take on the city in which you live when we come back here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest at the big table tonight, Alicia Tate, longtime journalist who was a publisher and editor of the Chicago Reporter here in town. She worked for Lisa Madigan as a speechwriter and a policy advisor, and now she's the director of programs at the Chicago Foundation for Women. You've seen Chicago from a lot of different angles. I mean, I have to ask, because when you were, like you said, the Chicago Reporter in the early 2000s, I mean, and they still do it today, there is a focus on race and poverty.
Yes, absolutely.
Working in the government, there's I would assume you've done a lot of policy advising on race and poverty. And even with the, as we're talking about here with your role with the Foundation for Women, you know, race and poverty play a role.
So
talk about what you've seen change and evolve over the last 20, say, years.
Well, you know, I was talking with some friends about this a while ago, and I remember when I first started at the Chicago Reporter in 98, and we still had to kind of make the argument that, like, race matters. Race is something you should pay attention to. Race is important. I don't think we have to make that argument the same way anymore.
Right.
Which is, you know, for better or worse, I think you'd have to be living under a rock to not think that race is an issue in Chicago. It's so visible. It's so open. It's just so out there and obvious that a lot more people are paying attention to it. I don't think they know what to do about it. And I think that the incredible level of organizing and activism that's happening, particularly among millennials, particularly among like black millennials, Latino and immigrant mm-hmm. young people, the dreamers, you know, all of that activism that's happened in the last few years. I don't think a lot of us, you know, older head civic types know what to do about all that, but it's a level of energy and change happening in Chicago that I have not seen
well,
in 25 years.
The Black Lives Matter movement here is led, I mean, some of the prominent leaders of that movement are black women.
Black women, and they are black queer women. And that's a very important part of their politics. And they make that very much, very much known. And that means that they sometimes clash with the more established, you know, black leadership in the city. It's really interesting to see the generational divides and tensions and how that'll play out. I don't know. But I think it is inspiring, and it is not coincidence that so many of these different pieces. See, Black Lives Matter. People say Black Lives Matter. It's not just one organization. I mean, there is an organization called Black Lives Right. Matter with chapters all over the country. But there's, you know, there are many organizations working on these issues. BYP 100, Asada's Daughters, any number of We Charge Genocide, all kinds of organizations, many others that I didn't mention. Working in coalition on all kinds of different aspects of this, you know, criminal justice reform. And what I find really interesting is they've used the election so much as community organizing tools, as we saw in the Cook County State's Attorney's Right. race, which is really interesting. But now they're really shifting. A lot of the work is around really redistributing resources into communities, you know, that there's a really sophisticated analysis of where are our dollars and our resources going in this town, and are those the right places for them to go? You know, and they really are demanding a whole kind of different investment in communities that have been underserved, you know, historically in Chicago. I have not seen that before.
Yeah, and it's interesting
it's
too
very
because
inspiring.
Obviously jobs are at a premium in some of the in minority communities, the African American community especially. I mean, the number of jobs has diminished. To point, I see some staggering quotes that you'll hear and stuff, 40, 50, 60% unemployed.
Yeah, it is.
You know,
terrible.
And you wonder how that plays into, obviously, how poverty plays into some of the other social issues that are grabbing headlines.
Yeah.
But it always comes back to the fact that there is an economic opportunity for some people in this city.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, to tie it into what we've been talking about, I mean, for us as an organization at Chicago Foundation for Women, to create this project around ending gender equity, we went and had conversations with hundreds of people around the city. And across all of the spectrums, everyone said women's economic security had to be the key issue, that making sure women have sustainable economic, you know, have wages and supports to just support their families, you know, live a productive life. That is the key issue, because you can't, you know, all these things, you want people to get civically engaged, you want them to be good citizens, right. You want them, you know, to do all this stuff. They can't do that if they are worrying about putting food on the table. They cannot be good citizens if they don't know how they're going to feed their children, or if they're making decisions between paying a medical bill or buying, you know, clothes, a school uniform for their child. So we have to make sure those basic supports are in place. And so that's why I do think it is very exciting that more different kinds of groups are coming together around the economic issues. And even though it's not the circumstances we would have hoped for, I think the state budget is also prompting a lot of that work. The Responsible Budget Coalition is, I think it's up to almost 300 different organizations now, a range of organizations that are trying to figure out all kinds of solutions, fiscal solutions, financial solutions, to preserve that economic security for vulnerable populations.
Maybe, I mean, in a weird way, maybe the budget impasse is bringing more people to the table civically to figure out how they're going to, you know, work with this economy moving forward than they would have done if politicians just snapped their fingers and put phantom budgets in, as they have done.
Well, I think people are making lemonade out of lemons, for sure.
Yeah,
definitely.
Alicia Tate, former publisher and editor of the Chicago Reporter, now the director of programs at the Chicago Foundation for Women. She's my guest tonight at the big table. Alicia, great to have you on the show. Thanks for being here.
Really enjoyed it. Thanks so much, Justin.
Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 10 o'clock, we start our summer-long series. We've already determined it to be a hit, so we're going to continue it. We need a good name for it. We need a good nickname for it. We have decided that this Cubs team is the best team in the history of baseball, and we feel that it would be only right and legit to be able to give legitimate, authentic, and crowdsourced nicknames to every single ball player on the 40-man roster. And are they at 40 right now? They're not 40 until August 1, right? Or September 1? I think so, yeah. So whatever it is, 28, 30, what, 35? What is it, 35 or something like that? What is it?
Sorry. 25.
25. So we'll start with the 25, and then we'll have so much fun in September when all the minor leaguers get called up. But we will tonight. We are going to begin with the two. We're going to. This is all about you, the callers at home, texting in and calling 312-981-7200. Because if your choice for nickname is chosen, we got awesome prizes. We're going to give away a bunch of stuff. So tonight, the two players. So spend your next hour listening to our show, but also in the multitasking. Justin Grimm, setup man, and Dexter Fowler, center fielder. Those are the nicknames we're going for tonight. Justin Grimm and Dexter Fowler. We good? All right, we good. Well, let's move on. This month, Chicago Magazine has a great article about the bomb trains. This is not new, but it's definitely underreported. Crude oil and other highly flammable elements are being transported through Chicago by train at alarming rates. As the infrastructure crumbles, could a derailment, or worse, cause an accident that could wipe out a city block? Yikes. Also, with lead and drinking water in focus around the country, thanks to Flint, Michigan, what are we doing here in Chicago to keep our water supplies clean? And also, what are we doing to reverse years and years of terrible treatment of the Chicago River? Yes, there is poop in the river. Let's call it out. Josh Mogerman's joined me now. He's a national media director for the National Research Defense Council, the NRDC. Josh, good to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
All right. So first, let's talk about these bomb trains. This is a story that has actually, I know some, you know, read some stuff over the years. It's been an issue here in Chicago for a couple of years now.
You know, this is a city that's built around rail lines. That's what made Chicago great. And now we're sort of seeing an unintended consequence where more and more oil is traveling on trains across the country. We're talking about, you know, 30, 30,000 gallon tank cars that are rolling like 100 at a time. Sometimes they're a mile long.
Oh my God.
And they're giant rolling pipelines. And because of the particular kind of oil that's moving through them, we're seeing a real increase in fiery accidents. And being a city that's built around rail lines, we have some neighborhoods that I think people would be surprised to realize that this threat is sort of rolling
it
right past their condos.
It crisscrosses,
yeah,
some, because it's an industrial corridor, and there are some neighborhoods, Lincoln Park, the downtown neighborhoods close to downtown that would be refurbished, or you know, like the West Loop. We got a new neighborhood. But on those tracks come these mile long trains with crude oil. This is not your oil that you're putting your dipstick in the car. This is some nasty stuff.
Well, this is particularly stuff coming out of the Dakotas. You know, when you talk to oil industry folks, they kind of like to say oil is oil. But there's a particular kind of oil that's being fracked out of the Dakotas. North Dakota is the second biggest oil-producing state in America now. And most of that oil rides the rails, and it heads east, and where between the East Coast refineries and the Dakotas. So particularly along the BNSF lines, which go through the western suburbs. And I live on the near south side. I see these trains coming past Bridgeport, through Pilsen, mm-hmm. through the South Loop. They make a turn and head south right by Soldier Field. And so these are neighborhoods where I think people don't think about environmental concerns and don't think about these sort of safety issues. And it's important for people to know.
You know, it is when you say fiery train accidents, that's not just sort of a colorful way that you're pulling it out. This has happened in other places. I mean, Galena was one of the places. Mm-hmm. There have been issues where trains have derailed and caused huge explosions.
Yeah, this oil from the Bakken is more volatile, and it may be because of the way it's extracted, it's fracked out of the ground, and so there's other stuff in this oil. But it's very clear that this is more volatile than other kinds of oil that moves through, and there have been a series of these fiery accidents where you have columns of smoke and fire that can be seen from miles away. In the case of the Galena accident last March, I think, mm-hmm. those cars were burning so hot that the first responders just let them burn for 3 days. And there are real concerns about what would happen if you had that in a dense neighborhood, right, or in a dense area like any of the suburbs or neighborhoods in Chicago.
Now, there have been some politicians who have jumped on this man. I know Dick Durbin's talked about mm-hmm. this. There seems like the Illinois senators especially, mm-hmm. because they recognize the dangers here. But is there any movement, is there any way to divert some of this traffic out of populated areas?
You know, this is a bipartisan issue. We don't talk about those very much, but you have suburban mayors of both political parties who have been out there speaking very, very loudly about this. You have Mayor Wisner out in Aurora, who is pretty strong to the left. You have some of the DuPage County mayors who are pretty far to the right, and they all agree. They all say that it doesn't make sense to do this anymore. And we're at a moment where we're rethinking a lot of things. We're rethinking our energy sector. You know, we're moving away from oil. We are moving away from a lot of fossil fuels. So it's a reasonable time to start thinking about how do we mitigate this risk. It's also a time when Chicago is rethinking how we sort of untangle the pretzel that are the railways moving mm-hmm. through this city. A huge percentage of the goods that move by rail through this country still go through Chicago, and at times it can take those things 6 days to make it through the city.
It's amazing to think like that.
We're rethinking that.
If you've ever been stuck at one of these stoplights or where they're actually on the ground, I think about, I know that they got the train spotters for some of the trains that come down through Northbrook and mm-hmm. and that area, that corridor there. I mean, it can be 30 minutes mm-hmm. of a train. Yeah, you're right. It feels like it's outdated, like it's time to rethink that. But how do you do that? Because the companies that are actually transporting this oil, they don't want to rethink it. This is the cheapest, fastest way for them to get from one place to another. They're not going to put this on a jet.
Well,
so what are they going to do?
Yeah, that's part of the problem. Part of the problem is that you and I are subsidizing the risk that's involved with this. And if they are forced to pay for some of the risk that's associated with that, we'll find money freed up very quickly to mm-hmm. do a lot of this work. But there has been discussions within rethinking the rail lines in Chicago about does it make sense to put some new rail lines that skirt the edge of Chicagoland, that move things out of there? And that's not just because of this risk that comes from these oil and ethanol trains and other hazardous material. It's also there's a real economic incentive for us to keep that those goods moving through the region, but not tie up our communities and not tie up the movement of goods.
Josh Mogerman is the National Media Director for the National Resource Defense Council, the NRDC. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. Chicago River Talk, and also this big summit tomorrow at the White House. Finally, right?
They're actually in Flint.
Are they? Yeah. Oh, the president's going to Flint.
He's going to Flint.
Wow, even better. All right, we'll continue the conversation here on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. In studio with me, Josh Mogerman. He's the National Media Director for the NRDC. All right, you know, we talked about bomb trains, which one question, and I had a great texter who talked in. I mean, there is a political ramification to this, and that's the idea of pipelines. 319 says, wouldn't a pipeline to transfer oil be the safe option? And pipelines kind of come with a lot of political baggage.
Yeah, there's a lot of fights that have been underway. I think everyone heard the fight over Keystone XL. And what's important is that's sort of a false choice. The oil companies are looking to move more oil, and that means more of everything. But ultimately, right now, the oil, 80% of the oil moving on the rails is coming out of North Dakota and the Bakken. Most of the stuff we get in pipelines is coming from Canada, the really heavy tar sands oil, and there are different issues. Adding a pipeline doesn't address the issue of oil trains, and dealing with oil trains doesn't address what the concerns people have about pipelines. We have to deal with both.
All right, so let's get to talk about the river. And before we do that, Flint, Michigan, big summit tomorrow. The president coming to Flint. Finally, he didn't want to go. The governor has made this almost a partisan issue in the way that the governor is carrying around Flint water, saying, it's great, taste it, it's great, there's no problems. What is happening? It's becoming like a almost like a theater. That's happening in Flint.
More like a circus, unfortunately. Yeah. But, you know, when the water crisis was going crazy, you had celebrities coming through on a day-to-day basis. We've been working with local communities there to litigate to bring clean water, which unfortunately hasn't happened. At this point, there is still a lot of lead in the water. The Virginia Tech professor who sort of broke this whole thing wide open and is working for the city right now described drinking Flint water as being like Russian roulette after new tests that he ran earlier in the month. So it's an ongoing problem, and I'm glad that the president is going in there to see it for himself. Congress has a lot of work that they need to do to get the resources in place to fix Flint, to get the lead out of Flint, but Flint's just the tip of the iceberg, and we have a problem potentially here in Chicago. Yeah. We have a problem nationally with infrastructure that we have not invested in that exposes us to a lot of problems. And it's important to go to Flint to talk about this problem where you have a city of 100,000 people who have literally been poisoned. But it's also important to talk about the risk we're suffering in other places too.
Well, Chicago, obviously, you know, we don't have a water supply issue with Lake Michigan and everything around it. But we do have old pipes. We do have possible lead in water. I mean, we've seen just in the last 2 weeks CPS saying they want to test the water in the schools. We've seen the water commissioner abruptly resign, mm-hmm. which is never a good sign when the testing has gone out and we haven't gotten the results yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, is there something we need to worry about here in this area in the Midwest when it comes to lead in our water supply?
Well, I think any big city like Chicago and the suburbs was probably built at a time, particularly here in the industrial Midwest, where it was common to use lead lines. And that's lead in the water mains, which has largely been replaced. But the big concern is the service line, which is the line that connects your house or your business to the street. And that is, if your house was built before the 1940s, probably was lead. In Chicago, we continued using lead service lines well into the 1980s. Mm-hmm. So this is a problem that is really distinct here in Chicago. If you have concerns, you can call 311 to get the city to come out and test your water. They are apparently getting lots of those calls right now because of increased attention to this issue. Personally, I live in a house that was built in the 1880s, and I am Would not be surprised if there was a lead service line. So I have a simple filter. You have to buy lead-specific filters, but you can buy them at stores like Bed Bath & Beyond. And I think that's really important. I have a six-year-old in my house, and yeah. I'm not taking chances. I think most Chicagoans need to be aware of this issue and to take precautions to protect your family.
I just think about all the water that I've pulled out of the faucet here in the Trib Tower.
I'm sure it's as clean as it comes in the Trib Towner. Colonel McCormick didn't go cheap on his service lines.
Oh, boy. Oh, think about that. All right, Pete, can we take a break? Let's take a break for the news. I know we got Jack Haggerty coming up. Is there a way, time-wise, where we can come back and talk about the Chicago River? Because I want to give a little bit of time to talk about cleaning up the Chicago River. It's not our drinking, which is good. It's not like the Flint. It's the Chicago River. But we've seen some moves from not only the government, but other groups trying to clean up the Chicago River and remove some of the things that we didn't think were still in there. Especially when we talk about sewage and things that are still, you know, are still in our Chicago River as we speak. So we'll talk about the different ways that we're trying to clean up the Chicago River after the break. Josh Mogerman's my guest. He's the National Media Director for the NRDC here in Chicago. Stay with us. All right, let's get to this floatable situation. It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. I'm with you till 11 o'clock. Josh Mogerman is with me. He's a national media director at the NRDC. Talking about the Chicago River and cleaning it up. We've seen such great strides in the last couple years. I remember, you know, I remember being a journalist and covering the Chicago River and worried about the fish that came out of there or no fish and this, that. But you've seen a lot of strides in the last couple of years, but there's still a lot of work to be done. Okay. The promo that I did today, which has stirred up a lot of, no pun intended, it stirred up a lot of stuff. It was essentially about what's in the river. And, you know, is there still sewage in the river?
There's actually a website you can go to that tells you in real time if there is sewage in the Chicago River right now. It is called isthereSewageInTheChicagoRiver.org. And you can go, and it's based on data coming from the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District, which is our regional water regulator. They deal with, they manage the river in a lot of ways. And a huge amount of the water in the river comes from their water treatment plants. In some places, okay. It's 70% of the flow of the river is coming out of those water treatment plants.
Okay.
One of the things I'm really proud of with NRDC, when we first started, we sued MWRD to force them to disinfect the water that they put into the river. Basically, they were not doing that. It's one of the only waterways in America that wasn't the case. And what that means is they were putting in... my boss likes to say intestinal miasma. It's bacteria, human bacteria. So is there poo in the river? There's poo bacteria in the river sometimes, and that's a problem. The good thing is that there's new leadership at MWRD, and they are moving away from that. They're going to be that disinfection is occurring. It's already occurring at two of the of their water treatment plants, and we're going to have a significantly cleaner river that's as a result of that. But we do still have the problem of every time it rains, there is stuff that gets flushed out into that river every time we get anything over an inch and a half of rain, which is more and more frequent these days. And that's where you get anything that's being flushed off the street, that's in some cases being flushed out of basements. We have a combined sewer system, mm-hmm. So stuff, literally sewage going into the river. And this is where you get that term that you mentioned earlier, floatables.
And that happens with the lake too, right?
It does happen with the
locks when there's a flood kind of situation and sewage seeps into
lake. That happens much less frequently. You know, the Chicago River, we reversed it 100 years ago. And when it rains a whole lot, when it rains just a little, like an inch and a half, we start filling our sewer system and it goes into the river. The river still wants to flow the way it's supposed to flow, which is into Lake Michigan. And when you get these really big storms like we've had the last few years,
it's almost like the water doesn't know what to do.
Well, the water knows exactly what to do. It knows that it wants to go downhill.
Right.
And basically what happens is the sewer fills up and the river gets to be higher than the lake. And the MWRD and the Army Corps of Engineers are forced to open the lock and the river flows the way it was intended to flow, and it flows out into the lake. And we usually have beach closures for a week at a time, or at least a few days, because we have that human miasma making its way out into the lake.
So that's essentially what is closing beaches. When we're in situations when they're doing the summer, like he can't come out, that kind of thing, we're talking about bacteria. Mostly human bacteria.
Well, so we have a problem with the Lake Michigan is a really big closed system, and there are a whole lot of ways that bacteria can make its way in. But yeah, the beaches are being tested for E. coli, which is a stand-in for a whole bunch of other nasty bacteria that make people get sick. And when you have E. coli levels at a certain amount where people are very likely to get ill and have stomach problems, that's when they close the beaches. The level in the lake is universes lower than what we have in the river. But the good news is that we are cleaning the river, and the investment that we're seeing along
How are we doing it?
Well, so that point of disinfection is really important. So we're going to stop putting poo germs into the river. That's a big deal. We're also having a lot less in the way of industrial inputs, the sorts of really scary chemicals that had been going into the river for a long, long time. We've changed the way we think of the river. It's no longer just something for floating barges and putting our sewage into. Now it's something where people are out there on boats, people are paddling, people want to be by the river. And we've moved away from this is an industrial waterway to this is a river going through the most beautiful city in America, and we need to treat it like the waterway floating through. And I think that's beginning to happen. We have a long way to go before anybody's going to be jumping in and swimming in the river.
Do you ever see a Chicago in which people would do that? Or do you foresee a Chicago where the river is this cleaned? Is a waterway that people are consuming in that kind of way?
Well, I think 20 years ago, if you told people you'd see people paddling on the river every day. And my office looks out on the river. I see the rowing teams going through. I see people paddling every day. I don't think people would believe that. When I was growing up, I never thought that I would see that sort of a thing. So I don't see that happening right away. I think there's a real legacy, you know, to your point, of misuse. And there's a lot of stuff in the muck at the bottom of the river that would need to be cleaned up. But I think that's what we should be aiming for.
There are cars at the bottom of that river.
Absolutely.
I worked on a project, or it was around a project that was demonstrating. They did like a X-ray almost.
The radar.
Yeah.
Stuff. Yeah.
And it was just like, oh, there's a car.
Mm-hmm.
There's a car. So there's a lot to go. Josh Mogerman is the National Media Director for the NRDC. Josh, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Justin.
And we got to have you back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks a lot.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. Well, coming up this Friday, there's a big Kentucky Derby event at Venue 1 on the West Loop on Randolph Street. It's called the Next Steps Derby, which is their inaugural Prelude Derby Party. It's a fundraiser for Next Steps, which is a Willowbrook-based organization dedicated to helping people rehabilitate from devastating spinal cord injuries. The tagline for Next Steps, redefining rehabilitation. Joining me now is Jack Haggerty. He's a board member and a patient at Next Steps. Jack, nice to meet you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me this afternoon.
I love that tagline, redefining rehabilitation. What does that mean? What's it mean to you?
Well, what it means to me now and what it meant to me, you know, 2 years ago are two different things. But what it means to me now is that one takes an aggressive stance toward a devastating injury to maximize the prospect of recovery for a patient in really dire setting.
It's something that a lot of people probably aren't familiar with, but it, you know, there's obviously inpatient and there's hospital care when someone has an injury, but what Next Steps really does is the next step of your life, what you're going to do when you get out of the hospital
and beyond, right? It's really sort of a lifetime mission of maintaining well-being and maximizing the ability to live an independent life.
For you, let's talk about your injury.
Mine was, you know, the injuries in this arena are as varied as you can imagine. Mine was a spinal cord surgery that went awry. Woke up, unfortunately, on Christmas morning a year and a half ago. And at some point that day, was unable to move anything below my neck. Sort of a frightening change of circumstances.
Yeah, right.
So one minute you're able-bodied and walking, and the next complete paralysis. I can't even describe to you the horror.
Tell us about what happened next. I mean, obviously for that to happen, that's something that we've heard stories about. I mean, it is kind of unfathomable for people to think that way.
You know, some people have suffer a spinal cord injury because of a devastating traumatic event.
Maybe an accident, something like falling off a
terrible
a horse,
terrible.
Things like that.
And there's a tragic story really behind Next Steps. Maybe we can talk about it in a minute or two that gave rise to its creation.
Sure.
But mine was with what they call a compression injury, which basically means that there was a compression, not a severance, of the cord at a, for me, it was a pretty high level. Because the injury was so high, I lost really the ability to use all my limbs.
Then it's an emergency situation.
Emergency, right. You know, went into Northwestern, had some emergency surgery to relieve the compression, spent, you know, 90-plus days in the RIC, a remarkable world-class inpatient facility. And after RIC, was looking for a place that provided as aggressive as possible and more of a lifelong mission toward rehabilitative care for mm-hmm. someone in my situation. And luckily enough, I happened to be friends with Pat and Kelly Hennigan, who happened to run, to me, one of the most remarkable facilities you could ever imagine, a place where I can tell you this, if you had a friend, a loved one, anyone that you cared about looking for help in the outpatient world for spinal cord rehabilitation services, this is where you'd want them to be.
What are those services? Talk about your life now, because obviously, you know, what happened on that year and a half ago, I mean, not being able to feel anything below your neck, that's changed. You're here. You with assistance, walked in.
Yes.
I mean, talk about what does Next Steps provide you now?
Next Steps provides me a place where they take aggressive steps towards promoting as much possible recovery of the body as can be obtained. And you look like someone who played sports.
Sure.
So they take what I would call more of an athletic trainer approach toward physical therapy as opposed to the type of therapy one might expect one's grandmother or grandfather might receive if they broke a hip.
Right.
It's not a basic, we're going to restore minimal function, send you home and hope that you're going to be okay. Here we're going to say we want to do the maximum and beat your blank to see what we can get, see what we can get out of you, right? So it's a no-limits approach.
I mean, do you like that approach? I mean, tell us about the struggle of having to push yourself. I mean, therapy and rehabilitation, a lot of it is about doing things outside of your comfort zone.
Well, I will tell you that my motivation is, aside from a wife and three beautiful girls, but my motivation really comes from the people that I see at Next Steps. For example, a young man, Patrick Stein, 21 years of age, has closed-in syndrome. So he can only move his eyes.
Wow.
I look at Patrick every day. I can move things, and I have the ability to ambulate to some degree. And I say, I've been given a great gift. I couldn't look Patrick in the eye and not give it 150% every day to make the most of whatever the good Lord is giving me in terms of recovery opportunity.
It's got to be hard to be able to do that 150%. I mean, there's some days you probably wake up and you say, I just don't want to do that today. I don't want to push myself. I don't want to deal with the pain. Obviously, being able to look in the eye, to be able to be at Next Steps is a big part of it. But what else pushes you? What gets you up that day?
Well, I have to tell you that it's in many ways, a lot of it revolves around Next Steps. Because when I walked in here and you saw me come into the studios on my arm crutches with my wife, you saw someone who was disabled, right? Now, when I walk into Next Steps and do my therapy and people are largely in wheelchairs, some of them can't move anything,
yeah.
They look at me as if I'm wearing an S on my chest. We're like, how can I do what that guy can do? Holy cow, right? So I'm their incentive, right? For them, I'm the dream. And I walk in there, it's like a different planet. I've walked out of the arena that most of us live in from day to day, and I've walked into the special place where I have physical skills that are remarkable and superhuman.
And that's a great way to look at it.
It's true.
Yeah, I mean, Jack Haggerty's in studio with me, a board member and a patient at Next Steps, a rehabilitation organization that helps people with spinal cord injuries. Their big party is coming up here at Venue 1 on Randolph Street, which is a great place. It's a Kentucky Derby event. It's their inaugural Prelude Derby party. It's called Next Steps Derby. This is big because this is a fundraiser, and you really want to get the word out to help Next Steps, but also to, I guess, rejoice in the fact that it's available for people when they have trouble.
It is, in fact, a celebration of life and a celebration of a remarkable place. And to hearken you back and make a true Chicago connection to the genesis of Next Steps and to make a Christopher Reeves connection. Mm-hmm. So John O'Connor, who's Kelly Hennigan's brother, at his 30th birthday party, we'll call it 15 or so years ago, they were at a restaurant bar on the river. And someone dared John to jump into the Chicago River. Yeah. Unfortunately, he hit a piece of submerged concrete and basically was quadriplegic. So suffered a sea level injury very high. And by the time they fished him out of the water, John had no ability to move any part of his body. His life was, by all accounts, over. But John was a driven person. John and his dad looked around the country for help after John was left inpatient care. They were looking for more advanced outpatient care. And at the time, basically the message to someone with that sort of an injury was take your antidepressants, sit by the window, and smile as much as possible. And John said, that's not right.
That's unacceptable.
That's right? Unacceptable. Now, they looked around the country for outpatient rehabilitation for specialty injuries like a spinal cord, and they found one or two places, and they took the best of what they could find around the country and imported it back here and created Next Steps. John was also on the Christopher Reeves board. John and Christopher were very close, and their dual mantra was to say, you know, we have resources. We know people. We can get help, but there's so many others that can't. We want to go to provide this type of level of care to those that don't have access to resources like we do. So that was the genesis mm-hmm. for the creation of Next Steps.
What's next for you? Obviously, you have to go to rehab to continue to be able to live the life that you want to live. Tell us about what it's like to live with a spinal cord injury as you move forward.
I guess it's different for me. I've lived I've been really fortunate up to this, you know, the last year and a half, and loved a great life and have had great things happen, but into each life, rain falls, right? So this is my travail. The true sadness to me is to see someone in their teens and their 20s suffer this sort of an injury. It's all I can say is the implications of a spinal cord injury are so daunting and depressing. I really don't want to regale them here. I mean, suffice it to say, you wouldn't wish that type of injury on your worst enemy.
Board member and patient Jack Haggerty of Next Steps. Next Steps is having their big Kentucky Derby event at Venue 1 on Randolph Street here in Chicago. It's called the Next Steps Derby. It's a fundraiser, and it's for the rehabilitation for patients with spinal cord injuries. Jack, thanks for coming in. Thanks for sharing your story.
Sure. Can I plug the website real quick? Mm-hmm. We're going to direct people to go to nextsteps.org, pure and simple. They can click on the Derby Party banner and find all the information about the party. May 6th, Venue 1.
You got it. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Very excited for this hour. This is something we've been thinking about for a while now. We still need a name for the segment. We need a nickname for the nickname segment. It's time to give the whole entire Chicago Cubs roster a nickname. A legitimate, authentic, real deal nickname for every player, coach, equipment manager, parking attendant. Ronnie Woo Woo needs a new nickname. They all need new nicknames. Because as we've been saying this whole entire show, We believe that the Chicago Cubs might be the best, not might be, are the best. They are. The 2016 Cubs are the best team in the history of the major leagues.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if they win the World Series. They're already there.
It's May.
It's already there. It's too. All right. So this is all about the Download Nation. 312-981-7200. We've decided that we're going to give everybody a nickname. Tonight, we're going to just do two of the players of the 25-man roster because we don't want to – we got to spread it out because we'd like to do this all summer. 312-981-7200. Call or text your ideas for nicknames on these two players. That's who we're doing tonight. Center fielder and leadoff hitter Dexter Fowler and setup reliever pitcher Justin Grimm. Dexter Fowler, Justin Grimm. All right? And we've got great prizes for the winners. That's how it works. If you give us the nickname that sticks, you're going to get a prize. We've got a pair of tickets to the soccer match between the Bayern Munich and AC Milan at Soldier Field on July 27th. How about that? See the world's best soccer back in Chicago in one of Europe's fiercest rivalries. So that's a pair of tickets to give away for anyone who wins. Also, the other prize will be a $50 gift certificate to Builder Supply Outlet in Broadview. You can meet Wendy Snyder and join her for an exclusive after-hour showing of the Kitchen and Bath showroom on May 12th from 6 to 8. So how about that? We got prizes to give away. 312-981-7200. In studio, our panel, our judges, two big-time Cubs fans and musicians. John Bologna,
wow, that's
and
a first.
John Bologna and Jeff Ruby are so dedicated to the Cubs that they feel like they've written the next Go Cubs Go. They're the new generation of Steve Goodman's here in studio on WGN Radio. The song is called Goat Is on Fire. Jeff Ruby, of course, moonlights on the side as the Chicago Magazine chief dining critic. Jeff, John, great to have you here. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So Goat Is on Fire. We're going to play it in a second as we line up the calls here and the texters. Where's this come from, guys?
No. Start, Jeff.
Well, the idea was to come up with a song that wasn't saccharine like so many of the Cubs songs, that wasn't false, and that actually paid homage to some of the history of the Cubs, poked a little fun at some of the things that have happened and the jinxes and the hexes and all that stuff. And as we researched this, you know, writing this song, the choices were endless. There were just so many crazy, weird things that I had forgotten about, you know, the little things that like sort of Sammy's corked bat, you know, like that was like gone from my memory. And
did you guys get Jock Jones in? Did he make it into the
Jock Jones did not.
Maybe
make
in the
it.
Second song we'll put Jock Jones.
That's the thing. I the song had to be less than 3 minutes. Right. That was the goal. It could have been like a 9-minute epic. It could have been like Stairway to Heaven.
It's so funny because I'm a baseball fan, but I'm a White Sox fan. And I will say that I really love this Cubs team, but it's because being a Chicago sports fan, you really do have a lot to choose from when it comes to the Cubs. And even as a Sox fan, I pay attention to all the stories. The Jock Jones is in the we were just talking on the show the other day about Goose Gossage when Gossage was the closer. And I was at Wrigley Field for one of the most unifying collective boos in the history of boos when he blew a save. So, but there's a lot of moments that the Cubs have created over time.
A lot of moments. And, I love the White Sox, too. I'm one of those rare people that loves the Sox and the Cubs, which – you know, maybe I'm not a real Chicagoan. I don't know.
No.
But the Sox, for all their lovability, I guess, do not have that level of crazy stories that the Cubs have.
Especially ones that just sort of permeate the entire city. I mean, we know everything about the Cubs, even Sox fans do. All right, so should we play the song, Pete? What do you think? Should we play it? Okay, so here is the world premiere. The radio world premiere, AM radio, the AM radio world premiere of the new Cubs fan song, Goat Is on Fire. Let's hear a little.
Big time.
Remember the fan who rushed the mound when after Randy Myers? This one's for him and Sammy too and all the other liars. It's for Durham back in 84, that time he lost the grounder. Every time that Humley swung and missed like a nervous flounder. The cat in 69, the goat in 45. The shot in 32, and anyone who's still alive. Every train wreck disaster, every freak show, every choke. His song's for anyone who was the punchline of a joke.
Every stiff behind the plate who never learned to catch. Ozzie warbling from the booth, the seventh inning stretch. Snow in April, swoon in June, rain delayed to trap us. That ump who stole the perfect game in 72 from Pappas. Santa's legs, Sepple's beard, Harry Carey's liver. Mitch Williams threw that crazy pitch that landed in the river. For Brock and Eck and Maddox, all the other studs we traded. Throw it back and let's play two with every Cardinal team we hated.
Go a little goat is on fire. Jeff Ruby and John Bologna, the new musicians that everyone's clamoring for here in Chicago. The goat is on fire. Where are you guys? Are you shopping it?
Shopping it?
Yeah,
are we taking it to all the record labels? And
well,
I was thinking more like, are you at Addison and Sheffield next to the guy who sells the racist T-shirts? That's where you should go.
Yeah.
Try to sell cassettes.
Why
in
hadn't
this
I
thing.
Thought of that?
Yeah, right. On a stick. Just put the cassettes on a stick. Just walk around with the stick and be like, cassettes, $5.
Well, what you're not mentioning is that John did a video to go with it, which is animated hilariously.
Right,
and I basically gave him the song and said, just do your magic. And he came up with some really, really hilarious stuff.
I'm blushing.
Well, there you go. The Goat is on Fire. You can find that at ChicagoMagazine.com and just ChicagoMag.com, and you can find it in there somewhere, right?
somewhere. Just Google The Goat is on Fire. There is an Alicia Keys song called Goat on Fire, which I found out at some point. But
when the Arista people called, the Arista people are like,
wait a minute.
So don't mistaken us for Alicia Keys.
I don't know if that's going to happen, but
probably not. Probably not.
All right, so let's go to the phones. Let's go to Pam. Pam. All right, time for some nickname fun. Pam, what do you like?
Pam, I am. I'm going by, first of all, you called him Grim Reaper. So I'd say they call the Grim Reaper, the Grim Reaper saying this. You see, I'm not reading it right because I'm nervous in the radio.
It's all right.
They call me the Grim Reaper. Harvest time is now. Number one. Holy cow.
There you go.
Now, as far as Fowler goes, I call him the Birdman.
Yeah, that's good.
Birdman of the Windy City. But, I don't know all their names, but believe me, the Cubs I've loved since forever.
I love it,
forever
Pam.
Chicago.
All right, I'm going to put you on hold, Pam.
Thank you, darling.
Thank
give
you.
Give me more names, and I'll write up things that'll
We're
blow
gonna be
your
doing...
socks off. Yes, I mean, advertising. I did that. But, I mean, that's what I do is slogans. And that. In fact, I'll tell you what. What was it? Whenever the Cubs got into the – this was in the 80s, but came up with a – here's my slogan, first at last. Well, it's been sitting on the shelf. I had brought it to there. I think still the original artwork is there, but first at last. And
first
I think
at last.
It's our year.
I like it,
first
Pam.
At last.
First at last. All right, hold on. Thank you.
That's it.
She did great there. That's a good start.
Birdman.
Birdman's good.
Well,
that's really good.
Yeah.
He soars
good.
Around the bases.
And she did a good job with the Grim Reaper. She's definitely a contender for right away.
It's harvest time.
It's harvest.
He should say that as he goes out of the bullpen.
He should come out of the bullpen with like a scythe.
Yeah.
You know,
like a hood or something.
And you play Whom the Bell Tolls. Like Metallica out of the ding ding ding.
Like,
from the organ.
Possibilities are endless.
like a little AC/DC or something.
That would rock.
That would be good. All right, so let's take a quick break. We'll line up because I got a bunch of texts here, and we'll get to everything. In studio with me, John Bologna and Jeff Ruby. When we come back, more with Justin Grimm, Dexter Fowler, 312-981-7200. Stay with us. All right, we're coming up with nicknames. We need a nickname for this nickname segment. We've decided the Chicago Cubs team needs nicknames across the board. Every player, every coach, every assistant, every office manager, every guy in the front office, the guy who sells the peanuts out front. Everyone's got to have a nickname on the Chicago Cubs team who we have decided is the best team that's ever played ever in Major League history. Jeff Ruby and John Bologna, two big fans and musicians. They did the song The Goat is on Fire, which you can find in Chicago Magazine.
Shaking my head.
All right, so let's talk. Tonight we've decided to nickname Dexter Fowler
and Justin Grimm. So Dexter Fowler, we're going to do this all summer long. Each week we'll have different Cubs fans in here and we'll take on different players. But tonight we've decided to pair Justin Grimm and Dexter Fowler. So let's check some of the lines. Let me see what I've got here so we can go through these, okay? All right. 815 says, Grim Reaper. We know that about him, right? The Harvester of Sorrow. This kind of doesn't roll off the tongue.
It's too long.
It's too long. Okay. 262 nice. Says, just inside the plate, Grim. That's good. That's good. Also has a good one for Fowler. Fowler the Prowler. So I could see the Prowler.
That rolls off the tongue.
Right? The Prowler.
The Prowler.
But does he really prowl when he leads off for the Cubs?
Yeah, he's not really. Like...
Sounds creepy. Yeah. 815 says, Grimson Tide. 708 says, Dash and Dexter Fowler. So that might be based on the crazy suit get-up that they had when they went on the...
That was the best.
He had a nice chartouche. Was it a chartouche?
Chartreuse?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm an art teacher. Chartreuse.
He could just be called Dash.
He could be Dash. Dash. Let me write that down. Dash. All right, and then we've got 262 says, the Grim Reaper, you're not making it home tonight. Okay. All right, so let's give a little bit more inspiration to some of the people out there. Let's talk about some things we know about Dexter Fowler and what we know about Justin Grimm. Who do we want to start with, Fowler?
Sure.
Let's start with Dexter. Okay, so you guys are a panel. Jeff, what should we know about Dexter Fowler?
Let's see. I think he's from Atlanta. I know that much. Played for the Rockies for a while. The Astros for a year, and his favorite fast food is Chick-fil-A. That I know.
How in the world do you know that?
It's just one of those things. Chick-fil-A. He loves the Polynesian sauce at Chick-fil-A. So, you think I'm making it up? I'm not making it up.
The first caller with the Birdman.
Uh-huh.
That could be a reference to Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's something there for Birdman.
Yeah, so it's a riff on the Chick-fil-A thing, people.
Okay, what do you think, John? You got anything on Dexter Fowler we should know?
Well, he's been on base. It seems like every time he's up, he's on base.
Always on base. He holds right now, I believe he is I was reading this article.
He's leading the majors.
He's leading the majors in on-base percentage, or whatever it is that he get, whatever that base to war, or whatever it is that you use, but he's leading the league.
And when I was listening to the game, they said that he shortened his swing this year, so...
So, tie in, guys, Dexter Fowler with the chicken thing, and why can't we call him Dexter Free Range Fowler?
I like that.
Free range.
Right
here. He's not caged.
Free range.
Free range, antibiotic free.
I don't think Chick-fil-A actually does free range chicken.
But I love free range.
But that's awesome.
That's
great.
Oh, my God. Martyr, you want to go to a soccer game?
I was at that one a couple of weeks ago.
you may have just spoiled it for everybody. Free range. He leads off. You know, he does what he wants to do.
He's covering all kinds of ground in center field. I mean, he's got tons of range. Whoa. Free range.
Free range. Wow, that's pretty good. Pete Zimmerman, you're the Cubs fan on the squad. What do we need to know about Dexter Fowler?
I think that's all.
That's all.
Got it?
Yeah,
he's good.
Yeah, he's good.
Awesome.
He's got a little bit of pop. He can hit the home run. He's a leadoff hitter. He had that weird offseason where he tried to go somewhere else, but he came back to Chicago for less money.
There was that day where we thought he was going to be signed with the Orioles.
Mm-hmm. Another bird.
And then he
I think
showed
he led
up.
The league in triples a few times, too, for what that's
triple,
worth.
Triple threat. Triple bird. Triple bird. I'm working it here, guys. Triple.
Triple free range.
Triple three times.
Chicken.
Three times.
Triple.
Triple chicken.
Dexter
deluxe.
Three times.
Deluxe flower.
Dash Fowler. Triple free range.
This is the bit.
Okay.
This is the bit. We're
getting there. We're close.
It's a show about nothing.
312-981-7200. All right, I gotta bring in. We have so many more here that are coming in, but I gotta say, free range may have stole the show for at least Dexter Fowler. We'll take a break. We'll hit the news. We come back. Justin Grimm. Obviously, he's got a Twitter handle. His Twitter handle is Grim Reaper, so he already has kind of the Grim Reaper nickname. But as we said, we want more taglines or some other stuff. We heard Grimson Tide, which I really like. I don't know why I like that one. Grimson Tide.
Here comes Grimson. Alabama just called. They said you cannot use Grimson Tide because it's too close to Crimson Tide.
And I think he's a big Georgia Bulldog alum.
Oh, he is.
So he's not going to want that.
All right. Well, we'll talk Justin Grimm, Dexter Fowler. We're coming up with nicknames for the entire Chicago Cub team tonight. Fowler and Justin Grimm. We'll take a break. Jeff Ruby and John Bologna are in studio with me, and we will continue this after the news. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right. It's time for we continue Picnic, which is probably the best name for this segment. Thank you to the 312 who texted that and said that'd be a good name for this segment. The Picnic. I like it. It might stick. John Bologna and Jeff Ruby are in studio with me.
We're
picnicking. Go see their music video at Chicago Mag for Goat Is On Fire, the song. They are the Cubs fans that are helping us. All right, we are doing nicknames for the Cubs all summer long. Tonight we are starting with Dexter Fowler and Justin Grimm. So I want to go and go through some of the texts here before we get to some more facts. We want to talk about Justin Grimm. All right, Dexter Fowlover.
Dexter Fowlover Fowler.
There you go.
I don't know if that rolls off.
262 says bird is the word.
Bird.
Okay.
Bird
is the word. I got some great ones from my buddy Tommy. These are good. He says the straw because he stirs it up, starts it off.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, that's also,
good. Yeah, I like that.
He's got the waiter because he sets the table.
I'd say Tony Kukoc's?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't steal that from Tony.
You can't steal from Tony.
Yeah, he's the waiter.
No, you can't do that.
But it's good.
I like this one, the discount. Dexter Fowler, his nickname should be Discount, since he took a discount to come back to Chicago. Like that one a lot, Discount.
Discount so. Dexter.
Discount Dexter. All right. So okay, so let's transition quickly. Actually, let's go to Lisa. Lisa, you're on the line. Okay, you're in Picnic. What do you got for Dexter Fowler?
Okay, guys, now listen. A nickname, he has to be short and sweet. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, Dexter Fowler's home run last year, Father's Day, the Instagram that he showed of his daughter showing it. He is a great father. He is a Chicago icon. We don't call soda or anything. We call it pop. He is Pops.
Pops Fowler,
Pops,
yeah.
Fowler.
Pops.
That's
he is
good.
The father. He sets it up for everybody else. Pops.
That's
gotta be Pops Fowler.
Pops. All right.
That's... Pops.
All right, Lisa. Pops All right. I feel like you're yelling at me.
She's
all
like, right. No, it's you don't good. Understand. It's
you don't
Pops.
Understand. It's
no
Pops.
More.
Thank
That's
you,
top
Lisa.
Three.
That was great. Yeah. All right, let's go to Gary. Gary, Pops. You're on the Picnic. Dexter Fowler or Justin Grimm? You got a nickname?
For Fowler, I actually don't have a nickname. I think he ought to be a symbol. I know it's the wrong time for that, but right. You know. Right. But anyway, but a flaming bat.
A flaming bat. So yeah, and it actually works because it's you know with the nicknames or the emojis that are taking over our society. Maybe there's no nickname. Maybe it's just an emoji.
Yeah. See, yeah, there we
there
go.
You go. All right. Emojis thanks, Gary. Thank you for that.
And then you just call him like the center fielder formerly known as Dexter Fowler.
Wow.
All right. Let's go. All right. So let's talk Justin Grimm. We did Justin. No, we didn't do Justin Grimm.
A little
Justin
bit.
Grimm. What do we know about Justin Grimm?
University of Georgia.
Okay.
Know that much. No, he's married to a gymnast from Naperville.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. When I Googled it, Justin Grimm, I'm like, okay, Justin Grimm's wife. Yeah, from Naperville.
Yeah.
So homegrown. I don't know.
Okay. All right. So homegrown, maybe.
I don't know if that's
Grimm. We don't have a whole lot to go on with the words.
You guys are really killing it with the info on Justin Grimm.
I think he's from Nashville. He's from Tennessee, and he went to Georgia, so he's a bulldog.
He's a solid southern guy.
Solid Grimm. Middle reliever.
Brothers Grimm.
Yeah. Played for the Rangers for a while, yeah.
Okay.
He is the Mark Burley of the Cubs in that he's the guy that always catches the ceremonial first pitch.
Oh, he does.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Grim.
Okay.
He likes that part of the.
I learn something new every day.
Grimly. Grim. Mm-hmm. Grim.
When I first thought of it, I was thinking along the lines of a jester because he kind of he jokes around, and like if you saw that video when in the wacky preseason when Joe Madden was doing his antics and whatnot, he'd have dance parties and Justin Grimm was always involved and did a
he was
funny
always
dance.
That.
He was okay. Always involved in that too.
All right. So 312-981-7200. If we like Justin Grimm. So here are some ones that are coming in for Grimm. We have all the Grim Reaper ones. We had Grimly. And then also from Tommy, he said we should call Grimm the clogger because he comes in to stop the rally. Right? He clogs it up. So that could be, I don't know if that's a great nickname for Grimm's like, don't give me that one. I don't be the clogger.
It's like Roto-Rooter. I mean, it's a kind of a bad connotation there. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. So there's that.
The plumber.
Here's one for Dexter. This one actually may make the final semis here. I like this one. Feathers.
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 Yeah. You know, he's the fowler. Feathers connotates like fast because birds will fly.
Yeah. The chicken thing.
You got this Chick-fil-A reference.
Okay, that's pretty good. Feathers.
Right. Okay.
Doesn't sound tough.
Right.
Yeah. But you could be, but you know, it's almost like Willie Mays or Willie Mays Hayes. He didn't sound too tough, you know.
It's true.
Grimm's, Peter says just in time. 262 says Slim Grimm Baggins. Is that like a
ooh, precious.
Like he's
it's like a, sort of a Hobbit reference, but not really. That's good. I like that.
Slim though. How's that a Hobbit reference?
I would say like Grim Pickens. You know, Slim Pick. No, that doesn't work. That doesn't work.
I think Grimace.
Grimace.
Grimace is good.
But I'm not allowed.
All right. like the Grim Creeper, the Grim Sweeper,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, comes in. Let's really break down what he does for this team. He comes in for situational outs.
Yeah, gets a couple outs in the seventh or eighth inning.
Shut the door. He's a guy that comes in after the starter has run out of gas. Mm-hmm. So maybe he's a, I'm trying to think of a gas station kind of thing or
seltzer. What?
Self-serve.
Self-serve.
Yeah. But he's a stop. I mean, he's not a stopper, but he's not a closer, but he's a setup
stop
guy.
Gap.
He's a stop gap. Stop Grimm.
Stop.
Maintain Grimm.
Maintain Grimm. Yeah, exactly. Lefty.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Is he a lefty?
No, he's a righty.
No,
he's a righty. But like he's a situational guys. So let's think that through, Download Nation. 312-981-7200. Okay, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll do the semifinals and the winners tonight, which I have a good feeling I know what it is.
This is exciting.
But the winners will get some prizes. We got some great prizes to give away. Here we are on Picnic. Or I got another one. Tommy likes Roll Call.
That's good.
Roll Call. We're going to make a decision on that. Roll Call or Picnic. Those are both good names for this segment. 312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
Every curse of jinx and hex and plague we saved that Rojas botched. Every boozy blowout afternoon we wish we'd never watched.
For anyone who can't get used to seeing games at night,
Mark Racism dugout firing up a camel light.
The bleacher bum with too much rum, the rooftop party boozers, the W flag that gathered dust through years and years of losers, the fan who blew off work and paid to watch some hopeless bums, the kid who stands on wavelength for the homer that never comes, Elia's mouth, Bartman's hands, optimism in our glands, ivy twisted round our hearts, and every time the anthem starts, we hope and wish and do believe, and curse and roar and groan and grieve, guess I'm preaching to the choir, but it's time to set the goat on fire.
There we go.
I'm
the goat is on fire. John Belong and Jeff Ruby, both in studio, the musicians behind that song. They're also our judges tonight as we pick nicknames for Chicago Cubs players. That's our goal this summer every week. We might alternate. We might do some White Sox, too. But tonight we determined that we were going to start this series with two fine Chicago Cub players, center fielder and leadoff hitter Dexter Fowler and setup reliever right-hand pitcher Justin Grimm. All right, so let's go through. Let's wrap it up. We've got about 3 minutes here to get through all the text and phone calls, and then we'll get the semifinalists going, and we'll pick a winner. Let's go to Rich. Rich, what do you like?
Hey, for Grimm, since he's a setup man and gets specific people out, the sniper.
Ooh, the sniper.
That's good.
That's good. I like that. Thanks, Rich. Thank you for that. That's good. I like that. Okay. Let's go to Gary. Gary, what do you got?
How about for Grimm? Well, it could work for either one of them, but for Grimm, how about the custodian? He comes in and cleans up the messes at the end.
Oh, that's good.
Wait,
Gary.
I missed that. What
custodian.
Was it?
The custodian.
Ooh.
Cleaning up the mess.
Right.
Yes.
I like that,
before
Gary.
The closer comes in. Yeah.
That's good, man. Hold on. That's good. I like that one. All right. There you go. All right. So 847's got one for the segment for this nickname segment. He goes, how about today's lineup?
Not bad.
That's not bad. That's not bad. 815 also gave us, he also went with Grimm the Sniper. So the sniper is getting some play. For Dexter, this is from 815. As he leaves the dugout to go up to bat, Joe Maddon always tells him, as you go, we go. So Dexter's pick nickname should be You Go.
Like the car.
Like the car, yeah.
Because that was a fine automobile.
815 says the clincher. That's good. That's baseball-like.
Not bad.
I like this one a lot, and this might be a winner. 262 says the tourniquet.
That is great.
The tourniquet to stop the bleeding.
That's perfect.
I like that one a lot.
262. Where's 262?
That's a Wisconsin.
Nice.
Wow. Yeah.
Can we allow a Wisconsinite to
pick this is a Wisconsin. Let's set the Racines and the Kenoshas.
All right.
They don't care about the Brewers. They're
Cubs. Cubs fans are everywhere.
No,
Come on.
All right, so there's a lot of good stuff here. All right, so let me kind of break down what we have for both guys, and we're gonna determine who the winner is. Okay, so for Dexter Fowler, here's what we got: Dexter Fowler, the Birdman. Okay, Pops, mostly because we love Lisa's enthusiasm.
She threatened us. We're scared.
Rob Martyr's gem, Free Range.
Yes.
That's really good. Also from 708, Feathers. And we're going to throw in just for fun, I forgot his name, but the gentleman who called and said, how about a symbol? How about an emoji? A fiery bat.
I could draw it up.
You could.
Yeah.
The center fielder formerly known as Dexter Fowler, just a flaming bat for, emoji. For
the goat is on fire.
On,
two.
Yeah, there you go.
And on,
sorry.
All right. On the all right. So we've got for Justin Grimm, we've got three choices here. We've got Grim Reaper. It's harvest time.
He has to go out of the bullpen with that slogan.
I just think that's so funny, like the visual of him having the Grim Reaper hat cape on. Looks like they're going to the right-hander. Oh, the Reaper's got the sickle, the whole bit. Man, that'd be really good.
And then when he comes up to bat, he's got a sieve instead of a bat.
That's
great.
It's great. It's great. All right. Also, we have the tourniquet, which just came in, which is pretty
I like that a lot.
That's pretty good. And what we just heard, the custodian, because he's always cleaning up the mess. So these
that's
are good,
nice
right?
One at the end, too.
Yeah. Pete Zimmerman, why don't we start with you? Birdman, Pops, Free Range, Feathers, or the emoji? What do you like?
Kind of like Feathers.
You like Feathers, huh?
Yeah.
All right. So Feathers is got a vote. All right, John, what do you like?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think for Fowler, I like the first colors. Birdman.
So we're definitely going with the bird.
Because the Cubs in 84, they had all these great like animal nicknames. I mean, you had the penguin.
Right.
You got rhino.
The bull, right.
This is the new Cubs.
Right.
We got to have more animals.
More animals. All right, Jeff, what do you got?
I think Free Range is the most clever, but it's not going to stick. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. it's almost too clever by half. So I think the two most clever beyond that are Feathers and the Birdman.
Okay.
And I think the Birdman probably has a little more staying power.
All right. Esmeralda, are you there? You know what? Maybe we'll have Esmeralda
be the authority on this, Esmeralda Leon. All right, so Esmeralda, I know you've been listening, of course, but which nickname do you like best for Dexter Fowler, center fielder for the Chicago Cubs? Birdman, Pops, Free Range, Feathers, or just an emoji of a flaming bat?
That emoji was good.
It's good.
But I don't know how people would yell that, because I feel like people would want to yell. Right.
They would hold their cell phones up.
They would just, or a piece of paper with a stick on it in the picture. I love Rob's free range.
So good, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I'm thinking, too, because you guys were talking about how he runs around the field.
Right.
Yeah. He's like a chicken.
He is.
I mean, he's not eating the grass or anything, but...
Well,
they should leave snacks on the ground, and then he could, you know, whenever he's out there.
Yeah, free range is P-E-D free, my friends.
That's pretty good. All right, so how about, okay, don't leave us, Esmeralda. Do you like, for Justin Grimm, do you like Grim Reaper? It's harvest time? He's got a full tagline because he's already, the tourniquet because he stops the bleeding? Or the custodian because he's always cleaning up messes? He's a setup man. He's a closer.
Is the Grim Reaper one Grim Reaper, and then it's harvest time?
Yeah, because he's already kind of calls himself the Grim Reaper. That's his Twitter handle. So
we just
kind of added harvest time.
I like that one.
Okay,
because I could imagine people would then make they would Photoshop him into movie posters and things like that.
All right, good. Then let's go with that one. Should we go with that one, guys? All right, so the winners tonight, it looks like we've got some winners, guys. I am going to make a, all right, so let's do, for Justin Grimm, we're going to call him the Grim Reaper, and he's going to go with a tag, it's harvest time. And you know what, I need to be the deciding factor on Dexter Fowler, although this was awesome. Rob Martyr's free range is pretty darn good, guys. Yeah. You know it is. So I'm going to stick with Rob Martyr's free range to win. So we have Grim Reaper, it's harvest time, and for Dexter Fowler, free range. Now, the last thing we need to be before we leave, we got to go quick here. Do we like today's lineup? Do we like roll call? Or do we like picnic for the name of this segment?
I think picnic.
Picnic?
It gets it right to
picnic
the heart of the matter.
Picnic is it. All right. Yeah. So you know what? And I don't have the people in front of me right now, but Picnic is the winner. I know we gave Rob Martyr one of the things, but we're not going to give him one of the prizes. So tonight, one of our winners, the Pam who did the Grim Reaper, it's harvest time, is either going to get a pair of tickets to the soccer match between Bayern Munich and AC Milan at Soldier Field on July 27. See the world's best soccer back in Chicago and one of Europe's fiercest rivalries. Get tickets online at internationalchampionshipcup.com. And then also Picnic, the 312 that texted in, is going to get a $50 gift certificate to Builder Supply Outlet in Broadview. All right. Great show. Jeff Ruby, John Bologna, thanks so much for being here, you guys.
Thanks for
the inaugural awesome. Journey of Picnic. Dexter Fowler, free range. Justin Grimm, Grim Reaper, it's harvest time. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Pete, I think we did a good job at the inaugural picnic. Well, next Tuesday night, we'll do it again with two more Cubs players. That was so fun. Free Reigns is going to love it. That's going to be the best nickname.
That is trademarked, by the way. I take 15% of any...
Rob, you got to come up with signs now. We got to go down... I'm telling you, it's going to be the beginning of every highlight of the 10 o'clock news. They're going to be like, let's kick it off at Wrigley Field. And there'll be a sign of you holding up a sign that says free range. You did it.
I like it.